Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sportage has been unleashed. And Red Energy, awarded Canstar's most trusted retailer nationally for 2021.
7 minutes past six. Hello, welcome along to Sports Day as the thunder roars around us. Take it easy on the roads, folks, as you get home if you're in the car. Todd Woodbridge is not far away from joining us to talk about the demise of the once great, great Davis Cup. In fact, it was one of my favourite sporting events. It was sold to Cosmos, a company headed up by Gerard Pique, international superstar soccer player, some 2 years ago, for $3 billion over 25 years. But under the new format, it's quickly fallen flat. It's burned incredible money very quickly, and it was in grave danger of extinction. The new plan to save it has been consummated, effectively on selling it to Abu Dhabi for 5 years, with the final in December. That's right, that month where professional players have always said they need time off to prepare themselves for the oncoming season. It highlights to me that, in part, professional tennis has clearly lost its way. The battle between the ATP and the ITF has now had a sacrificial lamb, and it is the Davis Cup. They lost their way with the players effectively destroying one of the greatest traditions in the sport in search of more money. I love the Davis Cup, but to me, it's already dead. Scoop, welcome to you. Some fixturing news before Todd Woodbridge.
Hello, Jared. Some strong stuff. Welcome to summer, by the way.
Yes.
December 1, we just had 30 mils in about an hour and a half.
And golf balls mimicking ice blocks that are falling from the sky.
Imagine if you had a teed off it. What's this? What's happening here?
I think it's got to be something to do with the weather, is it? Yeah, so he's on fire, really.
Goodness gracious me. Imagine if you had a teed off at 2 o'clock. You would have been thinking, what a day for golf.
Yes.
You wouldn't have made it in.
You wouldn't have. You would have you would have actually been called off. All golf courses would have been closed because of the amount of lightning that was around.
So some fiction news. Jay Clark reporting a very interesting story in the Herald Sun Online that the AFL is considering moving the start of the season by a day, and instead of it being the usual Thursday night Richmond-Carlton, moving the grand final rematch, which we'd reported on this show would be the next day, Friday, to, in fact, the day before, the Wednesday. So you'd kick off Melbourne Dogs Wednesday night of the G into Carlton Richmond Thursday night at the G. Now, why they would do that, I'm not quite sure. And it would be a big change for the AFL. Now, Jay's not reporting it's happening. He's just reporting that they're considering it. I would sit here tonight, be very surprised if that happened.
Well, I hope they do it because...
Why do you say that?
I think that the more blockbuster games we can have, the better for everybody. I think we haven't had crowds at the MCG for a long time.
Yeah.
So Wednesday night opener, you have a huge game. It's a standalone game. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, which means every time you...
Why the Wednesday though? Why wouldn't you just...
Well, why not is the Wednesday for me?
Because we haven't had it before.
Well, that doesn't matter. We didn't have a Thursday either. So that's proved to be a fantastic success. I think that we can learn from when we went to the first iteration of the game after game after game, which had a sexy name. I can't even remember what it was. The Festival of Footy.
Thank you, Queensland.
And we had game after game after game. It was fantastic. It was only for 2 weeks. And I think it'd be great to start with the Festival of Footy. Standalone.
Yeah, we've got a festival. We start on the Thursday, though.
Yeah, but you've got Wednesday and Thursday and Friday. And therefore, you have...
Are you in that much need of footy, are you?
Well, I just think it's a great way to start. That means you've got six teams getting a standalone game straight away.
Yeah.
And I've made this point many, many times. Mm. The one thing that Gil McLachlan should do before he leaves his tenure
next year
is to sort out the game cannibalising itself when you've got Saturday night, one game going up against the other.
No, I'm with you there.
We should be able to come up with a fixture where nine games are played
a standalone game.
Standalone, or the worst case scenario, you have two games on a Sunday afternoon going head to head.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree in principle with that. But I I'm not pro Carlton Richmond starting the season, by the way. But I would just start it Thursday into Friday. And I'd have the grand final as the grand final rematch as the Friday game because you get it's almost like a soft opening. You get Richmond Carlton 85,000 Thursday night. Hopefully you get a good game. Into the build up of the grand final rematch. That's how I would do it personally. But it looks like they're looking at Wednesday. Interesting opener on the Davis Cup. Jared has a a kid that grew up absolutely obsessed with the Davis Cup, would stay up till all hours to watch it. I never really quite understood why they changed the format. Now, maybe the format needed rejigging, but they've rejigged it to a point where it's a non-event almost now.
Well, it's become
a
non-event.
People like Todd Woodbridge and Leighton Hewitt,
yeah,
who represented Australia at the Davis Cup on so many occasions, talk about it like that, you can hear the passion.
Well, I think one of the biggest issues they've got is where they're playing the final and the month they're playing it. But I think the other issue where Todd probably won't agree is that they've put two other cups have emerged to go up against the once standalone Davis Cup.
That being the Laver
Cup. You've got the Laver Cup and you've got the ATP Cup. Let's go to Todd Woodbridge before I bastardise the words even further. Todd, get me out of jail here. Welcome to you.
Good on you, Jared. It's been a long year by the sounds of it. Look, I mean,
I thought I was actually going for another Gold Coast moment there for a minute, but I escaped.
I'm glad we didn't.
We're not sure exactly what Healy said, but it didn't sound like the sort of thing you would say over Mother's Day lunch.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
Go on, Todd.
Oh, goodness. Look, yeah, like the intro that you've given me into the Davis Cup, it's a really fascinating problem that we've got. And you mentioned the two other cups. I sort of understand where you're coming from. Look, the Laver Cup's completely different. That's a Europe versus the rest of the world, and it's a completely new and different format just over 3 days. So that's fine. The ATP Cup is an event that was on the schedule when I played. It was formerly called the World Cup of Tennis, and it was played in Dusseldorf in Germany, and it was on the calendar for 25 years. So that event has been around. So the Davis Cup, though, tried to become its own World Cup of Tennis. That's what it's done. But what initially has happened here is that the International Tennis Federation, which has run it for all of these, you know, years and years and years, didn't know how to financially make it viable. So they went commercial and they sold it. So they sold it for $3 billion for a 25-year contract to a company that have no tennis IP. So they've stepped in. They're just running an event, and it has lost its absolute core. And that is the history of the home and away ties, which is what made it so special, because you would play, you know, at Kooyong or Rod Laver Arena to your crowd, and they would help get you over the line. And then some of the most memorable matches you would play were in Spain or South America. You know, I played in Argentina where, you know, the crowd was a football crowd and it was brutal, but you remember it for that reason. And now we're playing, Australia played Croatia and we played Hungary in Turin with no fans watching, because no one can travel anyway, but who's going to go do that right now for a few days of tennis? And what is about to happen is that they've leaked it everywhere. They've now sold their soul to Abu Dhabi.
Yep.
And so everybody, and it's a 2-week event, Jared, in finishing in mid-December, so there's no off-season.
Yep.
So how's that going to work for the players? So no one's invested. And so where does it go? It dies. It has to.
Yep. And have the players got any say in this? Is there any representation, or is this just a Hail Mary and hoping that it works because the Saudis are putting their cash up?
Yeah, and so they're throwing money at it, and that'll keep a lot of players interested. There's no doubt about that. But look, the Hail Mary is in what the ITF has not done, and they haven't got the players invested in it. The players don't feel any ownership, and that's what we used to have. You know, you used to play for very little money to represent your country, and it was all about the heart and the blood, sweat and tears. Ask Leighton about that. And now it's an event where they're trying to throw cash to entice people to play, and it shouldn't be about that. So again, that's lost what the whole competition exactly was about.
So why did it get to this, Todd? I mean, ultimately, it seems like the calendar got so full we couldn't spare 5 minutes for the Davis Cup. And then once you're out of it, or you've won it two or three times, people would start to wane with their enthusiasm. But all of a sudden now it's got no entity whatsoever.
No, you're right. So, you know, like, you know, Roger would come along and he won it for Switzerland, but he found it hard to give 4 weeks per year. Like, it's a single week individually throughout the year and do that every year. So it got tough to get the top players playing all the time. It was also, look, there is the, you know, got to be fair, it was tough for some of the smaller nations to cost having home ties. They just really couldn't afford it. And so that became difficult for the smaller nations to do that. A nation like Australia, we're lucky enough to have all the facilities and everything to do that. So they were issues, which then they said, okay, if we put it all together, it might work, but not necessarily so. And it's really, really sad. But I think what's happened now is the ITF seem to have understood there's a mistake going on, but they've already sold it. Mm. They can't actually control it themselves anymore because they gave up their asset.
So here we're given carte blanche to resurrect it. What format would you go and how would you do it?
Look, I'd bring it back to home and away and find a way to make that work. Because what the Davis Cup is about promoting tennis in countries where young kids can see it for themselves. And if not, they can follow their stars as they play away. But the home tie, we played the USA at home this time, the next time we're in their country. And that's how it's always been. And I went to Perth as an 11-year-old, as a little Davis Cupper, to represent New South Wales, to watch John McEnroe, Gene Mayer, Peter Fleming, the Super Max and Pat Cash. That was my inspiration to be a player. That doesn't happen anymore.
What was your favourite moment? Because I look back on tennis and some of the greatest moments as a viewer watching were Davis Cup moments when I think it was Nuke went head-to-head with Stan Smith, when Philippoussis, was it in France? And he had the whole of France basically bagging him. Yep. It was his finest moment.
Leighton coming back from two sets to love down against Fed.
I was there with my daughters. It was and with Fitzy's daughters, it was one of those great moments as a family.
I could not move watching at home.
No, it was incredible. What was your favourite moment, Todd, both as a player and as an observer?
Well, as a young kid, it was watching Cashy win at Kooyong and that most famous leap and Neil Fraser sitting in his big armchair. I remember that vividly. But then as a player, you mentioned two ties that I was at and played a pivotal part. We won in Nice in 99 when Flip played amazing, but Mark and I won a match when we hadn't played very well that year. And that was obviously Mark Woodford. And then, look, I don't know if you remember, but I got dumped in the final in 2001. As the number one player in the world, we put in Pat Rafter and Leighton Hewitt over myself and Wayne Arthurs. There's lots of things to talk about there, and I'm comfortable with that happening. But I had won numerous Wimbledon titles and was ranked number one in the world and got benched, and I felt something.
Team balance, Todd. Team balance.
So I felt that in 2003 I had a lot to prove when we played the final in Rod Laver Arena, and I felt I played my best ever match in that final. It was as pure a tennis match as I ever played, and that was sort of just to say you should have picked me back a couple of years ago.
Gotcha.
We're talking to 22-time Grand Slam winner Todd Woodridge.
And one-time drop Davis Cup player.
I'd forgotten about that.
Haven't
forgotten about it at all. Todd, we need to ask you about Novak, and let's just revisit some of your comments. So this is November 16 on Sports Day. It'd have to be a huge change of circumstances for him to come.
I would think he'll be here. That's
I'm only going
by my gut. I've said this all along the last few weeks. I would be very surprised if he didn't. And it's a Grand Slam. That's what we play for in tennis.
How's the gut feel right now, Todd?
No, I'm still with it. Okay. I'm sticking to it. Sticking to it. You can't turn away from that. Look, he's still playing games.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. And his dad's come out this week and talked about blackmail and other stupid things like that. I actually thought it was his uncle that would have come out with something like that, but it was his dad. He has to make this decision to come, in my mind, because what is happening around the world, even more so with this new variant, is that there are going to be more countries in the world that say you can't play if you don't come in vaxxed. So it makes no sense to be, using it as a political statement that I can make my own decisions and go wherever. You can. You definitely can. But you're going to, I think, throughout 2022, you're going to find that it's not going to be just Australia that's going to stop you from competing. It's going to be other places as well.
Todd, I'm happy to offer you a wager. I'm happy to offer you odds as well, because I reckon he's Buckley's and none to come.
Hello.
Do you really?
Yep.
Well, I mean, he's giving up, one more shot at passing Roger and Rafa. And I think you never know in sport how things can change. And that US Open that he lost, these other guys are starting to believe. You give up another opportunity. You don't know what happens with your body. There are always factors that change history. And it'd be a shame to have made a decision like this one and then not really achieve that absolute greatness. But, you know, he's still got time, there's no doubt. But I'd be surprised.
Just looking through.
We'll have another conversation about this.
Just looking at Dan Murphy's online in the Penfold section, Jared. I'm sure Todd's got a bit of it in his cellar, so we might have to make
Mate,
it interesting.
I thought you were a bit more of a Penfold Max's man. I can afford that.
Todd, great to have you on. There's plenty happening in the world of tennis, and we look forward to all of your work on Channel 9 this summer.
Good on you guys. Thank you.
Todd Woodbridge giving us his insights into not only his own career, but that of the Davis Cup. I think you're more of the Bordley man. We're both the Bordley men here.
Of course.
A good exchange at the net by you two. We'll see who wins when Novak puts the jab in his arm.
We're here for Macca's 30 days in 30 deals. More Sports Day right after this.
I'll put you this way. As far as playing at the tour level, I don't know when that's going to happen. Now, I'll play a round here and there. A little hit and giggle, I can do something like that. To see some of my shots fall out of the sky a lot shorter than they used to is a little eye-opening. But at least I'm able to do it again. That's something that for a while there, it didn't look like I was going to.
At least I'll be able to do it again. Some pretty haunting words there from Tiger Woods, who came very close to losing his life, came very close to being a paraplegic in that car accident, and now is returned to the golf course, able to, in his words, play hit and giggle. Jared, at 45, chances of him getting back and playing in another major?
Well, this is just a stab in the dark.
I know. How would
Somewhere
you know?
Somewhere between none and not much. I mean, you know, he was in trouble with his bad back, yeah. Let alone, I mean, he could come back and play, but whether or not he's ever able to compete again at the top end in the last day will be highly surprising, but he's done a lot of things that normal people don't normally do, so we wish him well.
And so you're, for the record, your favourite Davis Cup memory?
I think it's probably, it was either 85, I think it was 86, Penfords v Cash. I think Todd alluded to it. An incredible comeback. One of the greatest efforts I've ever seen. Australia.
A peak footy career for you. So you were just watching somewhere with a mate?
I was watching. I can remember exactly where I was watching. I was at St Andrews Beach watching on the couch down there.
Okay.
And a close second would be Philippoussis against. And this was the beauty of the Davis Cup. When it's at home, you got 100% of the crowd.
Yep.
When you're away, you got 100% against. And Philippoussis, it was his finest moment, in my view, as an Australian athlete. It was an incredible performance. He knew it hung on him, and against the odds, he was brilliant.
I'm going Leighton's comeback
that
against
was brilliant,
Fed
yeah.
in what was semi-final, would have been 03.
Yep.
So peak Leighton, just after becoming world number one and winning
the
US
Open. I don't
think
Roger ever forgot it either.
No, and I don't reckon Leighton ever let him forget it, and why would you, to be honest? 133693, it's not that old number, 133693. We've got a slab of Urban Myth, the new alcohol-free beer by Urban Alley, and trust Jared and I when I tell you, it is good stuff. And that's coming from a couple of guys who like to drink an alcoholic beer. This is good
Get
stuff.
Get on the beers.
Yes, thank you, Premier. I appreciate that. 133693, if between now and 7 o'clock you want to make your recommendation for your favourite Davis Cup moment. Plenty more coming up. We're going to speak to Tony Shepherd, of course, the chairman of the Giants, but also in charge of Venues New South Wales, who are having another crack at our Grand Prix.
Trying to get a world-class event.
He's going to make, of which they don't really have one. I mean, they claim the Everest, but it's a bit too, it's in its infancy at the moment.
Too young to be considered.
And I mean, don't ring up and say the NRL Grand Final, because Jared gets more people watching him at his tennis court in Brighton.
I mean, that's not a global event. We're talking about the Grand Prix.
Just being cheeky.
Oh yeah.
A sports update for Tyre Power, here to help you stay safe on the road.
133693 is the Harcourt's open line. If you'd like to pick up a slab of Urban Myth, a new alcohol-free beer by Urban Alley, give us
good?
A call now. Scoop, you've got the news update before you, though. Noel from Kilo Downs, welcome to you.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I love the Davis Cup, you know, from the past. And there was one particular match that sort of really stuck in my mind. It was John Alexander in 1977, I think, against Adriana Panatta.
Yep.
I mean, that just went on and on and on. And the last two sets were just incredible. It was just a big marathon. I think close to 4 hours or something.
And was it at Kooyong?
It was here in Australia, definitely. And I've got Italian heritage, so I couldn't lose
that. Who were you barracking for?
One way or the other. I'm not going to say.
Okay.
No, obviously, John. Obviously, John.
Nice work, Noel. In fact, stay on the line. I've got a slab of urban myth for you.
Nice.
So you can take that home and drink half a dozen cans and still keep yourself nice.
You must have half a dozen slabs in the back of the car.
I've got a few there waiting for you. I've got a couple for you, actually.
You keep saying that.
One for Zoe.
You keep saying that. And just, I'm not sure Zoe and Lawrence actually need any more, to be honest. Groundsmen in Brisbane, according to Robert Craddock, are prepared and contemplating hiring a tent for the Gabba deck.
To protect it.
If you've been living under a rock, it's still a week away from the ashes, so it's not quite under a rock. If you've been living under a pebble, there has been significant rain in Queensland.
Yep.
To the point where the whole warm-up game's been called off. They're practicing inside. They could almost have a little indoor tournament, couldn't they, Joe?
Good idea, Scoot, from you.
Thank you. Might have stolen it from someone. And essentially, they're worried about, you know, the pitch for next week. I mean, the Gabba drains really well. We hear from Swanee all the time during footy season.
Yep.
But they've had significant rain. The weather's starting to improve, but there's strong weather forecast for late next week. The test starts on Wednesday. Jared, it's not looking ideal.
It doesn't look ideal, and maybe we're going to have a draw early in the piece. If we got through 4 or 5 days, it would be quite miraculous the way the weather has been and the way the weather is predicted to be. And it, I think, favours England because they've had so much more preparation.
No doubt.
We were given an opportunity to catch up a little bit during these last 2 weeks, and yet it's been totally reined in for a long time up there. So Australia is, at $1.60, Australia is a shocking bet.
I'd be surprised if anyone was putting money on them at $1.60.
Mm.
In fact, if you have had the money on them at $1.60, please feel free to make your case, 133-693. But next, we're going to Tony Shepherd. He's the chairman of the Giants, but more importantly tonight, he's the chairman of Venues New South Wales. They're having a crack at the Grand Prix. Let's find out how serious a chance they think they actually are. Tony Shepherd to join us next. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're powered by Red Energy, Canstar's most trusted energy retailer, and the all-new Kia Sportage, which has been unleashed, Jared.
Tony Shepherd to join us shortly to tell us how he's going to pinch the Grand Prix. But here's the opening round scoop. I've got some information. I've got some mail.
The Healy fixture.
Wednesday night. Just imagine how good this is going to be. Dogs v. Demons or Demons v. Dogs, depending on whose home ground it is.
Assume the Demons.
Yep. Carlton v. Tigers on Thursday night. You got a problem with this so far?
No, I like it so far, apart from the fact that it's starting on Wednesday.
Brisbane v. the Bombers at
the
Gabba.
Okay, I like that. Yep, Bombers, two finals teams, Brisbane looking to go one further, yep.
So that's a pretty fair start, wouldn't you?
Yeah, love it.
Okay, well, let's lock that in.
Surprised you didn't get the Giants in there, Jared.
Well, I did have the Giants in there, but I'm saving them up for a bigger blockbuster later in round two. Tony Shepherd joins us, the chairman of GWS. He's also the chairman of Sydney Stadia, among other things.
New South Wales.
Tony, it's been a while. Welcome to you.
Hi, Jared. Good to be here from you again.
Yes, we haven't had our postseason post-mortem, but we'll get to that. It was a pretty fair finish by you guys, and it augurs well for the season coming up. But we're not talking about that right now. We're talking about you trying to grab yourself a special event up there in Sydney.
Yeah,
probably.
What are you doing, Tony? This is our event.
Yeah. You don't have ownership in perpetuity. You stole it from Adelaide. In fact, I'm in Adelaide at the moment, and they're all wishing me the best.
So
the Premier down.
So can I ask you this, Tony? If you pinch this one, would this be your first special event up there in Sydney? You've got an NRL Grand Final. We ticked that off, but
That's not a special event.
Well,
that's
a backyard
event. It's a very special event.
Okay.
Yeah, it is a very special event.
Yeah, it's special, but I'm not on the global scene just yet. It's quite there with the Melbourne Cup.
It has about 600 million viewers, so it's pretty well up there.
It's got a couple of viewers. I mean, if you're believing that rhetoric from St. Peter, you'll believe anything. Tell us, how do you go about getting it? Who do you have to win over?
Well, you have to win over the owners of the F1, and obviously I'm not directly involved in this. This is something that our government people will be doing, our destination people, you know, led by Stuart Ayres, the
sports minister.
Great minister.
Yep.
Yeah, destination minister for tourism and what have you. Mm. He's a very smart guy, and he's, of course, a very strong supporter of the Giants, which just shows you how intelligent
very
he is
smart
as well.
Bloke.
Yeah. And so it's up to the government and it's up to the, you know, the owners of the Grand Prix to make that sort of decision. But it'll be a fabulous event in Sydney and it certainly would certainly inspire the city, that's for sure.
Tony, why would it be better in Sydney than it is in Melbourne?
Oh, it's just a better city.
Well, that's simply not true.
Well, you obviously haven't spent enough time here.
Well, Jared has. Jared, you make the call. You're the one that's lived in both cities.
Sydney's got its nose in front in a lot of areas.
Oh, come on.
There you go. I rest my case. Guys.
It's got its nose behind in a few areas. But, Tony, can I ask you a question that may well not have an answer? How much would it cost you to get it? Because given...
I have no idea. I have no idea what it is. I have no idea what.
How much do you reckon that we're tipping in? Because it's under lock and key, and no one ever is able to know.
I honestly don't know. Although I do remember that we set up Transurban many years ago when we got Melbourne City Link, and I was we had our arm twisted to be the first sponsors of the Grand Prix. So I have had an association with the Grand Prix from the day it started in Melbourne. Anyway, but. That was Jeff Kennett saying to us, well, you've got to do the right thing by the city and our sponsors the Grand Prix, so which we did.
And that would have been commercially sensitive like everything else where we're tipping out more than we the most average people would like to know.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But anyway, now look, I don't know whether the government here will succeed in getting it or not, but, you know, a bit of competition doesn't hurt anybody. That's what we do in the sporting world. It's all about competition and getting the best deal you can. So
The bridge would have to be part of the track, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
I think the bridge would be, again, I think this is, you know, my view. I think the bridge would be extremely difficult because, you know, for a Grand Prix, you'd have to close the bridge down for at least 2 weeks, possibly three, and that would be...
You got a tunnel.
Totally damaged.
You've got the tunnel there. Put your Transurban hat on. You could force everybody into paying tolls
at
Transurban.
It hasn't got enough capacity. I mean, the tunnel takes, you know, two lanes each way, but the bridge takes eight lanes each way.
So Jared, if you're not going over the bridge, and you can't particularly drive a race car around the Opera House. Why are we moving it to Sydney for?
Where do we put it, Tony? Give us your best choice.
We've got a relatively big harbour, and we've got lots of roads around the harbour foreshore and what have you. So
got a lake here, Tony.
Oh, no. Yeah, nobody would go in it.
Tony, can I ask you, do you see yourself significantly behind the MCG in the race for the second test, or you... in there batting away with
you've gone to cricket.
He's a man with many hats there, Tony.
Well, look, we're batting away. We looked after cricket last year, you know, in the Indian series and bailed them out. And
so they owe you. You reckon they owe you?
Yeah, well, there's no O's in sport, as you know. But,
that's right.
So, look, we're basically just saying to cricket, look, if you need us, we're here and we're happy to have it. And We believe we'd get full capacity crowd because everybody's been starved of cricket for so long and sport, light sport for so long. We've got no restrictions, so, and it's a beautiful ground. So we reckon we can sell out two tests in Sydney, no worries at all.
Geez, we've covered some topics tonight, Jared.
Well,
Tony, we'll be asking you about cola.
No, we won't be asking about cola. We need a whole show
don't
to do cola.
You would. You'd need a whole show. You'd need to listen to me weeping as well at the same time. So, yeah.
Tony, give us your pass mark for the Giants. How many wins next year,
Jared?
Oh, look, we've been doing that. Jimmy Bartel runs a sweep every year, and I went it last year because I got closest to the number. I haven't really looked at it well this year coming up, but my view would be 15 to 16 wins.
Well, that'll give you a fair chance of playing in big finals. Tony, appreciate you getting on the
line,
and enjoy yourself in Adelaide.
Thank you. Rightio. Thanks, guys.
Tony
Take
Shepherd,
Bye.
Giants Bye. Chairman and potential thief of the Grand Prix.
You're kidding. There's no way Sydney are getting it.
I'm not saying they will.
Well, they're just going to drive it around the rich streets where you used to live.
Can I ask you this? Do you think we should be boasting about being the most congested city, the biggest most populated city?
You know what? It's funny you say that. It's exactly what I was thinking listening to Tom Elliott yesterday talk about how we're going to have 6.2 million by 2030. And I was thinking, but
traffic. Just think traffic.
Do you actually want that?
Just think traffic.
I mean, Swan Street and Chapel Street already with, and not everyone's back at work. It's as standstills. And if we have one incident, if someone scratches the side of their car on Eastlink, the whole joint stops.
I think we're getting thrown to a break. We've got 2 minutes, have we? We've got 20 seconds. I'll tell you how far we've come. When I first went to Torquay as an eight-year-old, it was one lane down and one lane back. It took forever around public holidays and Easter. Nothing's changed, and yet we've got four lanes both ways.
I dare say the world has changed a fair bit since you were eight, Jared.
Yeah, but the time just takes exactly the same.
Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy and the all-new Kia Sportage. Maggie Payne joins us, as she always does this time of the week, from Country Racing Victoria. And look, we haven't had great weather in the last couple of hours, Maggie, but we've had pretty good weather across the weekend as the country races roll on.
Yeah, and it was a great weekend. There was plenty of people trackside, and I heard you talking about traffic earlier. But you know where there isn't any traffic? Out in the country. Escape the city and don't worry about any traffic.
We've got plenty of options available this weekend, Maggie. Five big meetings. Are they all big? Which is the biggest?
Oh, I think Pakenham might take that cake. Jared, we've got the Pakenham Cup. It's a standalone metro meeting on Saturday. And then there's also races at Stawell and Balnarring Picnics. But they're all pretty sold out. But there might be a few GAs left around. And then Sunday, we've got the big Werribee Cup and Bairnsdale Christmas races.
Would Jamie Carr, after she's been through a lot in the last few weeks, Jamie Carr, but is she riding on Saturday at Pakenham?
She is. She makes her return officially at Mornington and Moonee Valley, but she's riding the favourite in the Pakenham Cup.
Hello.
So she'll be hoping. She's got a good book, and she rides the favourite Smoke and Romans for Kieran Maher and David Eustace. So great to see her back on course, and she'll be riding a few winners, I think.
Give us your favourite in the Werribee Cup Sunday.
Well, we'll have to wait for the acceptances to come out. So I'll be waiting tomorrow and getting them. And then, yeah, hopefully...
Come on, Maggie, you're better than that. You don't have to wait for the acceptances. Just tell us, who's the favourite as we speak?
I actually don't know. We've got to wait. They've got about 40 nominations. Right. So I think...
Is Dosh
in
there?
Hopefully we've just got a bit of...
Stop, Jerry.
No, Dosh. We're saving her for the autumn month.
Okay, all right.
That's right. Yep, Oakley Plate.
Oh, hopefully she... Well, you know she's speedy from the front. So Oakley Plate.
She's a front runner.
Jared, you pipe down. It's just because Jared missed out on backing her the first two times. Maggie, thanks for coming on. Looking forward to a huge weekend of country racing.
No, thanks, guys.
Maggie Payne there from Country Racing Victoria. Can you stop about Dosh?
I just like, you talk a big game about Dosh. I'd like to see some results.
She won her first two races and she came within an inch of beating Savva 2XL, who's a Group 1 winner. What else do you want?
All I know is you started spruiking her after the first two wins.
Cash.
And she hasn't produced ever since.
It's all about you.
Grant's down at Princetown. Welcome to you, Grant.
Hello, how are you?
Going well. How's the weather down at Princetown?
Wait, can you explain where Princetown is, please, Jerry?
It's still 35 degrees at the moment.
Oh, yeah, is it? Princetown, that's...
The humidity's through the roof.
Yeah, next suburb down from Port Campbell. So good fishing area.
That's G Healy neck of the woods.
It's good surf down there. You been surfing down there at all, Grant?
Nah, too many sharks for my liking. But anyways.
Tell us about the fixture.
Yeah, Wednesday won't work, mate.
Won't work?
A lot of people get paid on a Thursday.
Right.
For starters. And so you've got to make it Wednesday. You've got to make it more of a TV game.
Yeah.
And it should be the people's game. And a lot of people have Friday off. So Thursday's the best day to start, I reckon.
Smart man, Grant. Smart with him.
How many times do you drive up from Princetown to go to the footy, or do you go to Geelong?
Yeah, I go watch the Swanage play, mate.
Yep.
I would have went to Sydney to watch you play, you legend.
Oh, good on you, bro. Grant, you can stay on for as long as you like.
Thanks, Grant. Appreciate you coming on. Grant from Princetown there. Are there actually too many sharks? Are there lots of sharks down that neck of the woods?
Oh, they're there somewhere. But I haven't seen one, so...
You haven't seen a shark in your... How many...
Not
years
at Princetown,
been
I haven't, no.
Where have you seen one?
I've seen one.
You had any run-ins?
Not close. Seen one a couple at Kilcunda many years ago. Seen a couple at in Java of recent times, but they're only reef sharks, so they're not serious. But There's big ones around down that way, and
you haven't had any Mick Fanning incidents.
I haven't,
bat one away.
One cruise through the lineup of one of the reef breaks down there in recent times, and
well, you were there.
I wasn't there, but my friend was, and I've never seen eight blokes paddle in at the same time as quickly.
So you're pro the Wednesday.
I am very much pro Wednesday.
Start.
Yep. It's a one-off. We're not talking Wednesdays every week. It's just a great way to start the season. Do you think it'll get up?
No.
Had any communication?
I've had a really good thing about it,
yep.
And I've had some feedback about my negativity,
mm-hmm.
And I have decided, Jared, in all my wisdom, that it's a shocking idea and I should keep it at Thursday.
Shocking idea? How is it a shocking idea?
Why do you need to start the season on Wednesday? Why?
Because
Footy's never on Wednesday night. Three standalone games.
Jared, it's fantastic.
You're about to have 23 weeks in finals.
That's right. The extra day
is not going to make a difference.
I'll bet you it works.
Okay. I bet you it doesn't. And I bet you it doesn't even happen.
Okay.
And I'm tipping that
it's a different story.
Richmond Carlton Thursday night.
Yes.
And Melbourne Bulldogs Friday night.
Okay. Let's wait and see.
How good's it going to be? Whenever that game is, Melbourne unfurling that flag.
Mm. Well, they're going to do
all
that Sunday.
All the fans that couldn't be there. I know, but before the actual game.
And Gary Peirce going to join us tomorrow night to tell us all about the details if you want to go and how you get in.
Join us tomorrow night. It'll be a different sort of show because Lawrence won't be producing and Zoe won't be
on
the panel.
Where are they going?
They're off to the Christmas party.
The same party we
didn't get invited to, Jared. But we'll be here working. You are listening to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy and for Wilson Homes. Jared Healy and Sam McClure with you for the next hour. Big hour coming up. Ryan Harris to talk all things Ashes. We now know we've got the wicketkeeper that we all thought that we'd have.
Is that official or unofficial?
No, it's official.
Okay.
Why?
Well, is Cricket Australia sent out a...
No, it's officially unofficial.
Okay.
It's unofficially
official. So taking it to the bank?
It's bankable.
Okay.
You got any little... No, don't have your sound effect there? No. She's a bit slow today.
Well,
so I'm
she's
not sure
focusing
what's
on the Christmas party tomorrow night.
I've never heard two people talk about a Christmas party like Lawrence and Zoe. It's
unbelievable.
To escape you to it.
There it is.
There
it is. Oh. I thought that was coming. They've been caged up. Okay. I mean, I suppose when you're rating 11s, it is hard to... Sorry, no, we'll go on. And we've also got Chris Anstey coming up. I mean, we've got Josh Giddey to talk about.
Got his book.
Chris's book?
He sent me a book. I haven't read it yet, but he has sent me a book.
So that's why he's coming on.
No, it's not the reason he's coming on.
I see. He just wants to talk about his book.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't even know that I've received it, but I have received it.
Well, I feel a little bit like Matt Doran here. I haven't actually read the book.
No, that's me. I've got the book, but I haven't read it.
Right, you got the book, but I haven't read it. I've got an excuse. Let's start with the latest in sport, though. So the Vic government has joined New South Wales in reaching out to Cricket Australia as an option for the fifth Ashes test. We talked about that last night. Martin Pakula, the sports minister, saying today that the MCG had undeniable claims as an alternative venue. Stock standard there from Sydney and Melbourne.
I don't think we need to oversell this. I think it's
100,000 at the MCG.
Well, it's not so much that. It's simply that's an issue. And I think Tim Lade made a good point. Cricket and money need to go hand in glove more so now than for a long,
ever,
long time.
Yeah.
But the reality is you don't want back-to-back tests anywhere.
No.
So, I mean, it almost precludes Sydney straight away. So this is a one-horse race as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, and it's not a parochial decision. It's simply...
What a way to finish the series. Day, night in Melbourne.
It just makes common sense.
Place would be pumping.
Any other decision...
Imagine Swan Street.
New South Wales, any other decision outside of Melbourne would be baffling and would have to come down to someone's bought it.
Speaking of baffling, so Tony Shepherd, who we know is the chairman of GWS,
and
he's also
the chairman of SCG.
Yep, and he's also chairman of Venues New South Wales, which
all goes hand in hand.
Keen on hosting the Australian Grand Prix as part of a tourism push when international borders open. I heard Mr. Perrottet, the premier, saying, "Well, why would you keep it in Melbourne?" Which was a very parochial thing for him to say. What did you make of that, Jared? Because there was a story that popped up on Channel 7 when you and I were on air a few weeks ago that, Sydney are making a play for the Grand Prix. I mean, in all due respect, it's not something that we haven't heard before.
No, look, to be honest, if they can win it, well, good luck to them. I haven't got this major issue with losing the Grand Prix.
Don't you?
No, I don't.
Why is that?
I mean, we pinched ourselves, Adelaide. We've got it. We've had it for 20 years.
So you'd be happy to share it around?
I'm not married to the Grand Prix. I mean, obviously it helps our tourism dollar.
Sounds like you're divorced from it.
But we still don't know how much we're paying for it.
No, that's true.
So it's a big secret, and until someone opens up the books and tells us how much we're paying for it, we don't know. I mean, it helps our reputation as a major events city.
Mm-hmm.
And probably Sydney could do with a major event. Have they got a major event up there?
Sydney major event.
I mean, they've created one in the Everest.
No.
That's going quite well.
You can't really call that a major event.
So have they got a major event?
Not off the top of my head, sporting-wise, no.
So, I mean, you can see why they're throwing everything at it.
Oh, don't you dare call the NRL Grand Final a major event, Lawrence.
Well,
you get more people to your tennis court on a summer's day.
Well, you'd get 80,000. I mean, it's a major day, there's no question, but it's not an international major event. We've got the Australian Open, we've got the Melbourne Cup, which is an international event, and we've got the Grand Prix.
Mm.
So we've got three. They've got, I don't think the Everest is old enough yet to. So
their major event is they've got better weather, which was reminded to me today when it was 30 degrees and sunny, and then within the space of 5 minutes, there was about 25 mil pouring.
I mean, bottom line is they've had a bad week themselves, New South Wales, / Sydney, but as a general rule, their weather is absolutely much better than ours.
And you would know better than most, having spent a lot of your life in both
someone
states.
Someone who wears shorts at the earliest opportunity. In Melbourne, I wear shorts 6 months of the year, maybe seven.
And in Sydney, what, 11?
3 weeks.
Yeah. Wait. No, yeah.
Oh, 3 weeks of the year.
All but 3 weeks you wear. Yeah. So 3 weeks you don't wear shorts.
That's right. Might have been four. Yeah, if you have a cold July.
By the
time August comes around, seriously, you've got 30-degree days.
It's just crazy, isn't it?
It is. It's an amazing
given
place
how close we are
and
we share a border. Did you read the story from Jake Nile in The Age today about
Jake twice today, but he didn't mention his story, and I haven't read it. Unless I have read it. What was it?
So essentially what Jake was writing, clearly he had spoken to I read it that he's spoken to Clarko's management and Hawthorn.
Oh, yeah, no, I haven't read this story.
And that Hawthorn are confident that they've made minimal impact on their footy department spend.
Right.
Because they've been able to split the Clarko payments over 2 years.
Right.
And then going over the soft cap this year, it's only cost them $50,000 in tax.
Right.
So, like, it was an interesting story because I think a lot of people, including myself, were very critical of Hawthorn because of what it was going to do to their footy department soft cap. And while I accept Jake's story that they've been able to split it over 2 years, the bottom line is they're paying a bloke $900,000 not to coach. And you can't get around that.
Well, let's call it $450,000 a year for 2 years.
Yeah.
That's given the wage of assistant coaches right now, and it's absolutely three.
Yeah,
that's an issue in itself. How little they are getting paid?
Yeah, because,
and I'm not saying 150 is a little, but
pre-COVID,
we're talking 80 hours traveling around the country.
Yeah,
and it's not even 150 for some; it's 120 or 100.
Editing vision. Pre-COVID, a good assistant was what, getting close to 300?
Pre-COVID, the best assistant coaches were getting north of 300.
Yeah.
North of 300.
Yep.
In fact, I know of one that was
close
on
to four.
Yeah,
I thought so. And now you're getting...
And that was a long time ago when he started on four.
Yeah, now you're getting really talented assistant coaches that have been in the league for the best part of a decade, earning less than some of the reporters that are reporting in the media.
Yes. And
that doesn't seem right, does it?
They've taken serious haircuts along the way. Senior coaches have taken small haircuts, not that much. But as a group, they're not happy about it, and I think that they'll be shaking the tin.
Hey, let's hear from Tiger Woods, one of the greatest that we've ever seen, talking out today in a long-standing media conference about that car crash and also, you know, when potentially he could get back to playing golf.
I'll put you this way. As far as playing at the tour level, I don't know when that's going to happen. Now, I'll play around here and there. A little hit and giggle, I can do something like that. To see some of my shots fall out of the sky a lot shorter than they used to is a little eye-opening. But at least I'm able to do it again. That's something that for a while there, it didn't look like I was going to.
There's a very large chance, Scoop, that he'll never play again.
Absolutely.
In fact, I think that's the...
Because of the injury?
Yeah. And his age.
He's 45.
So he could be,
he's actually relatively young.
Yep.
I mean, you think about when Jack Nicklaus played too. You think about Phil Mickelson and what he's been able to do as a guy in his 50s.
Yep. So maybe there's a chance, but he's a long way off. If he's talking it down his chances that much, maybe he's just monitoring, or maybe he's just dousing expectations. But
have you read some of the stories about, I mean, some of the interesting stories in the LA Times and whatnot, you know, quoting surgeons about how close he was to losing a leg?
No, I haven't read them, but
I mean, probably self-evident. Probably doesn't surprise you. Yeah. I mean, but as someone that you know has no medical knowledge whatsoever, I mean, he got so close to not being able to walk again. It's not funny. And now he's talking about maybe being able to play a bit of golf later in life. I mean, it's a big turnaround.
I wonder what golf course, if he could have one more round of golf and it wasn't at the Masters.
Yeah.
I wonder which golf course he would like. If you had one last chance of playing a game of golf, Scoop.
Great question.
What would your course be?
Well, I'm not a great one to ask because I haven't played a lot internationally.
Yeah, doesn't matter. I'm not worried about international. Tell us what your it might be at the Royal Edifile.
Okay. I surprisingly, well, maybe not surprisingly, I love the Australian Golf Club in Sydney.
New South Wales.
Yep.
Do you?
And I've heard a lot of people criticise it, and that, you know,
it's a good, great course.
A lot of people, you know, the eye of the beholder in golf courses, isn't it? But when we played there, it was 20 degrees and sunny, not a breath of wind.
Yeah.
And the course was unbelievable. It was immaculate. It was like they were setting up for the Masters.
Mm.
And I played terribly, and my mate who got married on Friday, Dan, shot 79, I reckon.
Have you ever played St. Michael's in Sydney? And excuse us, folks,
no.
While we chew the fat here. I mean, many of you will be golfers and probably have
and
played
not,
these courses.
Try.
And you're maybe thinking about which golf course you would play if it was the last golf game you were ever going to play. But St. Michael's is a course that I reckon is in the top 100 in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a great course. But it's unbelievable land.
Where is it?
It's south of Maroubra, but it's right on the coast. It's near the New South Wales
Hospital.
It's in
the top 50, Jared.
It's in the top 50.
Top 50 tracks in the country, which is, given how many good tracks we have in Australia, that's
really
significant.
But if somebody
like
Greg Norman or Jim Doak, is it? Whatever his name was. You know, a world-class golf designer got hold of that property and spent a few million bucks on it.
Yeah.
You could turn that golf course into one of the all-time great courses. The views, the panorama, the vistas.
Just having a look at the picture. Tom Doak, I think we think.
Tom Doak, yeah.
The pictures are unbelievable.
Oh, no, it's an incredible course. I'm surprised it's in the top 50, but I'm not surprised because it's vista and its environment is incredible. But as far as the golf course is concerned, I think it is a public golf course, actually.
Whew, she's $120 a round to play. It's not expensive.
That's
not cheap, sorry. But
anyway, they may have spent a fair bit of money on it. I think Barry Breen may have actually ended up being captain of St. Michael's.
Okay.
The legendary St. Kilda footballer and one-time CEO of the Sydney Swans. But for me, it'd be the National. The old National.
Hard to go past.
At Cape Shank.
Hard to go past. Would have been good a few years ago if you had a chance to buy any of that land. Anyway, it's a week until the Ashes begin. We're going to head
More
up to Brisbane.
More importantly, would have been better if you could have kept a bit of it.
We'll chat with Ryan Harris next. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. And for Wilson Homes, you can enjoy the Tassie summer in your brand new Wilson home. Not really the summer that we wanted to start with on December 1 here in Melbourne.
I mean, good start early.
Lovely start to the day. It then turned very quickly.
Yeah, I
don't see red and black on the radar too often.
No,
today
it was a cloudburst. There was 45 to an hour of thunder and lightning, which sent my dog Inca into...
old Inca.
Oh, she thinks she's doing a great job protecting us all. But my mail, speaking of weather scoop, is up in Queensland. Nick Hockley has flown in early and he's parading around the wicket going... And it reminds me of an old kindergarten days. Rain, rain, go away, come again another day. Something has got to change because it has been... pouring down up there.
Not only can we go to our man on the ground, he just happened to be a great fast bowler for Australia in many different formats. Ryan Harris, welcome, Ryan.
Yeah, g'day, guys. Great to chat to you.
Are we talking to you on the ground, or are we talking to you under the ground somewhere locked away in the indoor net?
Oh, I have been locked away. Don't worry, for the last couple of days, it has been horrendous. We've actually got this blue sky for the first time, I reckon, in a week. So I'm just on my way home from Queensland Cricket, which obviously borders right next door to the National Cricket Centre, where there's been a hive of activity. It's the teams are supposed to be out playing practice games, and they've been all indoors in the gym and doing all they can with the way the weather's been. So it's been heavy rain. It's been real wet. We've got flash flooding in different places around the city in Queensland, which is not ideal. But let's hope that the Gabba's not one of those places.
I think Cricket Australia missing a trick here right now, given that everybody's indoors. They could set up a viewer poll, have Usman Khawaja in one net, have Travis Head in the other net, and have the opening attack for Australia interchanging. And let's just see.
Ryan could even roll the arm over.
Ryan could actually give us a look.
No way.
Then we could actually see who's in form and who the viewer poll suggests should get the nod.
Yeah, I agree. There should be a few cameras set up. You'd see some. You could even get some, inside info on the keeping. Obviously, Judy's obviously. What's his name's gone home, hasn't he? So Inglis has gone home.
Yeah. I
agree. Yeah, there could have been a few cameras set up and seeing what they do. It's obviously a totally different way of preparing. You know, the indoor nets are a little bit different to what you get on the grass. Well, especially at the Gabba, you get the nice bounce, but you don't get the sideways movement. So it's fascinating. It's going to be interesting to see. Especially with the lack of test cricket that we've had this year. What is it? One test, I believe.
Yep.
And then coming off a lot of white ball cricket, how the boys are going to handle it. There's two ways to look at it. They're going to be really, really, really fresh.
Yep.
Or blowing after their first or second spells, not used to bowling third or fourth spells.
Really, really out of touch. I think it was Ian Chappell that told me about the first one-day game between Australia and England. It was a washout and there was only one day of play. And they made up some rules and turned it into the first one-dayer.
Right.
We could do the same, really, couldn't we, and have an indoor version just as a lead-up. I mean, they're pretty much Mickey Mouse, the lead-up games anyway. It would be fantastic to have England versus Australia in an indoor...
Live stream it
somewhere, yeah. Somehow. Yeah. Indoor facility. I reckon it'd be fantastic TV.
You'd sell tickets, I reckon, to it as well if you can get in there live. But the positive would be you'd have two games on because there's that many cricketers here with the Aussie A and England Lions as well. So you could have two games going, maybe even three or four. So you definitely sell tickets to it. But it's been a very unusual build-up, I can tell you now.
So, Ryan, given the obvious change in conditions when you're practicing indoors for long periods of time, what would a bowler like yourself going into a test match trying to get out of it?
Not a lot, to be honest. I used to hate it.
I bet.
So far from what I did and what we do on the outside in normal conditions. It's probably more just to keep yourself moving. And I had a bad knee, obviously, so I never really went at high intensity in there. Some guys don't mind it. Some guys can go at sort of half to three quarter intensity and do it and just sort of get a feel. And that's sort of what I used to use it for, is just to roll through my action and feel my timing and get my wrists right, all that sort of stuff. But again, it's so different when you're doing that at a higher intensity. So each individual is sort of different how they use it. But me, for one, I used to hate it. But the problem is, obviously, you hear the word, and it's not a great word, but workloads. guys have got to get enough balls to make sure that they're into their body, that they're prepared. You can't go from not doing sitting on your bottom for 4 or 5 days to try and bowl potentially 20, 25 overs in a day. It just doesn't happen that way. And it's obviously bad for your body. So they'd find ways. They'd have ways of doing it. That's what the S&C guys are paid lots of money for these days. They plan really well. They have different parts of gym equipment as well in there that they can use. And, they'll do some sort of agility work as well, I guess. But it is hard. But, yeah, it is what it is. You got to sort of, I guess it tests you because, not everything's always perfect in a build-up and this definitely tests you.
So how much will the wicket be underprepared, if at all?
That's a really good question, Jed. There's been breaks in weather at times, but it's just whether or not it's been the right time. If it hasn't rained at night, I don't think the ground staff will be sitting there waiting for the rain to stop. So Look, I think they would have been prepared for it. The ground staff there, obviously, you know, they're very experienced, so they would have known. So they may have put some time and effort into it, a week and a half ago, and probably knowing that the next few days look okay. So they'll definitely be jumping on it then and doing what they need to do. But I think, you know, come day one, I wouldn't have thought it'd be underprepared. It might have a little bit more green tinge to it for being undercover a bit longer, but being at the Gabba, that's probably not an unusual sight.
You know what I've been reading and hearing a lot of this week, Jared? You know, with Cummins being captain,
yeah,
it's like, well, fast bowlers and captaincy. Everyone's painting these fast bowlers as selfish and single-minded, as if they can't do both. You would have been fine doing both, Ryan.
Oh, not about me doing both, because I never did it. But I bet everyone that's saying that are all batsmen. I bet the batters are saying that. And I was going to say, hallelujah, we've finally got someone, a bowler in charge of the Australian team. It's taken way too long. But, I didn't captain, so it's hard for me to comment on it. But it's going to be tough. It is going to be hard. But I think from the outside, and I wish I had some intel for you, but from the outside, I know that Paddy Cummins and Steve Smith are pretty good mates. I'm sure that would have come into, you know, calculation when they were picking who was going to do it. And having Steve under Paddy, good relationship, both know the game very, very well. Obviously, Steve's captain. So, he's definitely going to be a huge help for Paddy. And I've already heard him say publicly that if there might be times when Steve's moving the field or doing whatever when I'm bowling, and that's all right. I'm happy for him to do that. And it's not as if he's doing it off his own back. We've discussed plans and all that sort of stuff. So that's going to be a really big help for him. But it's going to be a big challenge. It's not so much just on-field stuff. It's when you come off and have to do all your recovery after you had a long day in the field and do the media and do all the other things. That's going to be the big test for him.
Can I ask you why fast bowlers always go to fine leg historically? Since I played in the under-11s, always the fast bowlers go to fine leg. Well, happens all the way through to test cricket.
Because then they bowl from the other end.
Yeah, well, that's okay, but they're still in a position where you're supposed to be trying to recuperate. You may have to do a long chase round to basically square leg.
So you think they should go into third slip?
So why wouldn't you sort of have a slipping position?
So, well, historically, we're not great catchers. That was the thing historically. So it's a great question, because you see every now and then in an over, you finish and you get down there. Generally, you go down there so it's easy to get a drink and tear yourself off and prepare yourself. But in the odd over or two or sometimes more, you end up chasing three or four balls and you bowl a half of your second
that's
over
my
before
point.
You actually even start it. Yeah, so I've known, well, this, I mean, I spent a very small amount of time in Flip Cordon when I sort of finished for Queensland, and also, well, a couple of overs for Australia. But I know Mitchell Stark's one who's moved into the gully. Paddy Cummins now, it's either there or sort of mid on, mid off. But I think it's just a bit of the old fashioned. It's easy to get a drink, and, you know, even if the bowling coach wants to have a chat to you, it can get to you easier. But there's no reason why. There's definitely more, I guess, emphasis now on bowlers are, well, I don't want to put down our ex-greats, but bowlers are probably a lot better in their fielding, and they do a lot more fielding and catching and that now. So it's probably not it's changed. I think it's changed. But, generally, it's a really good question, because, I get asked that a lot. It's especially here at the Gabba. There's a corner at the Gabba. If you actually don't want to go down to fine leg, it's called Cancer Corner, because it's so hot.
Yep.
The humidity is 130%, and you don't get and there's no air, so it's probably actually it's not good for you.
Sounds to me like if he was a reasonable catch, which I suspect he is, he's probably better off sitting in second or third slip right next to Steve Smith.
Well, that's what might happen. You don't know. You never know. And Paddy could put himself wherever he wants. Now he's captain. That's the good thing about it.
Ryan, great to have you on as always.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.
Stay dry as well. Ryan Harris, our resident fast bowling expert from Australia. He joined us there for Mate, Australia's most satisfied NBN customers. Internet from just $59. Hey, just before we go to the break, and Chris Anstey, we've got a lot of TVs going on in the studio. Mm. And who wants to be a millionaire often plays? Mm-hmm. It's just off and on. Jared, if I said to you...
Well, don't test me here.
No, you'll be able to do this in your sleep. If an item was $15...
Yes.
And they were offering 40% off...
Yep.
What's the new price of that item?
That would be $9.
Thank you very much.
It's called intelligence.
Wait, thank you, Eddie. We just had someone, a fully grown adult person, pass on that. Now, Jared,
well, some people aren't good at maths, and I'm not good at maths.
I'm not good at maths either.
I had to think about that strongly.
40% of 15 bucks. We can all do that.
Me and Lawrence both got it.
Did you?
Incorrect.
Thank you, Zoe.
Incorrect.
You're kidding, aren't you? Well, Lawrence got it incorrect.
The question is, Scoop, how did you work it out?
If you took one look at Lawrence and you didn't see anything else,
yeah,
you'd say
mathematician,
good at maths.
Yeah. So how did you actually do the sums in your own head?
Well, there's two ways.
There's a million ways.
There's two ways you do it, yeah, and I did them two ways to double check that. Two and a half times, so 15 divided by 2.5.
Yeah. That's not how I did it.
No, but the way I did it, what's 10% of 15 bucks?
Yeah.
$1.50.
Yeah.
Times that by 4.
Yeah.
$6.
Yeah.
15 minus 6, 9.
Yeah. I did it another way.
Go on.
I did, what's 20%?
Yeah. And double it.
Is $3.
Yep.
And double that, $6.
Thank you.
I still didn't know I had it right, but it was a good guess. I
can't believe Lawrence got it wrong.
Lawrence.
Chris Ansey to join us next.
He's also preparing for the Christmas party.
Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Cansar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. And for Wilson Homes, enjoy the Tassie summer in your brand new Wilson Homes. Earlier tonight, we were joined by Aussie tennis great Todd Woodbridge, who banked that Novak was coming a few weeks ago. How did he readdress that tonight? Let's take a listen.
Good on you, Jared. It's been a long year by the sounds of it. Look, I mean,
I thought I was actually going for another Gold Coast moment there for a minute, but I escaped.
I'm glad we didn't.
We're not sure exactly what Healy said, but it didn't sound like the sort of thing you would say over Mother's Day lunch.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
Go on, Todd.
Oh, goodness. Look, yeah, like the intro that you've given me into the Davis Cup, it's a really fascinating problem that we've got. And you mentioned the two other cups. I sort of understand where you're coming from. Look, the Labour Cup's completely different. That's a Europe versus the rest of the world, and it's a completely new and different format just over 3 days. So that's fine. The ATP Cup is an event that was on the schedule when I played. It was formerly called the World Cup of Tennis, and it was played in Dusseldorf in Germany, and it was on the calendar for 25 years. So that event has been around. So the Davis Cup, though, tried to become its own World Cup of Tennis. That's what it's done. But what initially has happened here is that the International Tennis Federation, which has run it for all of these, you know, years and years and years, didn't know how to financially make it viable. So they went commercial and they sold it. So they sold it for $3 billion for a 25-year contract to a company that have no tennis IP. So they've stepped in. They're just running an event. And it has lost its absolute core. And that is the history of the home and away ties, which is what made it so special, because you would play, you know, at Kooyong or Rod Laver Arena to your crowd, and they would help get you over the line. And then some of the most memorable matches you would play were in Spain or South America. You know, I played in Argentina where, you know, the crowd was a football crowd and it was brutal, but you remember it for that reason. And now, we're playing, Australia played Croatia, and we played Hungary in Turin with no fans watching, because no one can travel anyway, but who's going to go do that right now for a few days of tennis? And what is about to happen is that they've leaked it everywhere. They've now sold their soul to Abu Dhabi.
Yep.
And so everybody, and it's a 2-week event, Jared, in finishing in mid-December, so there's no off-season.
Yep.
So how's that going to work for the players? So no one's invested. And so where does it go? It dies. It has to.
Yep. And have the players got any say in this? Is there any representation, or is this just a Hail Mary and hoping that it works because the Saudis are putting their cash up?
Yeah. And so they're throwing money at it, and that'll keep a lot of players interested. There's no doubt about that. But look, the Hail Mary is in what the ITF has not done. And they haven't got the players invested in it. The players don't feel any ownership, and that's what we used to have. You know, you used to play for very little money to represent your country, and it was all about the heart and the blood, sweat and tears. Ask Leighton about that. And now it's an event where they're trying to throw cash to entice people to play, and it shouldn't be about that. So, again, that's lost what the whole competition exactly was about.
So why did it get to this, Todd? I mean, ultimately, it seems like the calendar got so full we couldn't spare 5 minutes for the Davis Cup, and then once you're out of it, or you've won it two or three times, people would start to wane with their enthusiasm. But all of a sudden now, it's got no entity whatsoever.
No, you're right. So, Roger would come along and he won it for Switzerland, but he found it hard to give 4 weeks per year, like it's a single week individually throughout the year, and do that every year. So it got tough to get the top players playing all the time. It was also, got to be fair, it was tough for some of the smaller nations to cost having home ties. They just really couldn't afford it. And so that became difficult for the smaller nations to do that. A nation like Australia were lucky enough to have all the facilities and everything to do that. So they were issues, which then they said, okay, if we put it all together, it might work, but not necessarily so. And it's really, really sad. But I think what's happened now is the ITF seem to have understood there's a mistake going on, but they've already sold it. Mm. They can't actually control it themselves anymore because they gave up their asset.
So if you were given carte blanche to resurrect it, what format would you go and how would you do it?
Look, I'd bring it back to home and away and find a way to make that work. Because what the Davis Cup is about promoting tennis in countries where young kids can see it for themselves. And if not, they can follow their stars as they play away. But the home tie, we played the USA at home this time, the next time we're in their country. And that's how it's always been. And I went to Perth as an 11-year-old, as a little Davis Cupper, to represent New South Wales, to watch John McEnroe, Gene Mayer, Peter Fleming, the Supermax and Pat Cash. That was my inspiration to be a player. That doesn't happen anymore.
What was your favourite moment? Because I look back on tennis and some of the greatest moments as a viewer watching were Davis Cup moments when, I think it was Nuke, went head-to-head with Stan Smith, when Philippoussis, was it in France? And he had the whole of France basically bagging him. Yep. It was his finest moment.
Leighton coming back from two sets to love down against Fed.
I was there with my daughters. It was one of the most inspiring, and with Fitzy's daughters, it was one of those great moments as a family.
I could not move at watching at home.
No, it was incredible. What was your favourite moment, Todd, both as a player and as an observer?
Well, as a young kid, it was watching Cashy win at Kooyong and that most famous leap and Neil Fraser sitting in his big armchair. I remember that vividly. But then as a player, you mentioned two ties that I was at and played a pivotal part. We won in Nice in 99 when Flip played amazing, but Mark and I won a match when we hadn't played very well that year. And that was obviously Mark Woodford. And then, look, I don't know if you remember, but I got dumped in the final in 2001. As the number one player in the world, we put in Pat Rafter and Leighton Hewitt over myself and Wayne Arthurs. There's lots of things to talk about there, and I'm comfortable with that happening. But I had won numerous Wimbledon titles and was ranked number one in the world and got benched, and I felt something.
Team
to
balance,
prove
Todd. Team
that.
Balance.
So I felt that in 2003 I had a lot to prove when we played the final in Rod Laver Arena, and I felt I played my best ever match in that final. It was as pure a tennis match as I ever played, and that was sort of just to say, you should have picked me back a couple of years ago.
Gotcha.
We're talking to 22-time Grand Slam winner Todd Woodbridge.
And one-time drop Davis
Cup player. Yeah, actually, I'd forgotten about that. Haven't forgotten about it at all. Todd, we need to ask you about Novak, and let's just revisit some of your comments. So this is November 16 on Sports Day. It'd have to be a huge change of circumstances for him to come.
I would think he'll be here. That's
I'm only going
by my gut. I've said this all along the last few weeks. I would be very surprised if he didn't. And it's a grand slam. That's what we play for in tennis.
How's the gut feel right now, Todd?
No, I'm still with it. Okay. I'm sticking to it.
I like
absolutely
it.
Absolutely sticking to it. You can't turn away from that. Look, he's still playing games.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. And his dad's come out this week and talked about blackmail and other stupid things like that. I actually thought it was his uncle that would have come out with something like that, but it was his dad. He has to make this decision to come, in my mind, because what is happening around the world, even more so with this new variant, is that there are going to be more countries in the world that say you can't play if you don't come in vaxxed. So it makes no sense to be, using it as a political statement that I can make my own decisions and go wherever. You can, you definitely can, but you're going to, I think, throughout 2022, you're going to find that it's not going to be just Australia that's going to stop you from competing. It's going to be other places as well.
Todd, I'm happy to offer you a wager. I'm happy to offer you odds as well, because I reckon he's Buckley's and none to come.
Hello.
Do you really?
Yep.
Well, I mean, he's giving up, one more shot at passing Roger and Rafa. And I think you never know in sport how things can change. And that US Open that he lost, these other guys are starting to believe. You give up another opportunity. You don't know what happens with your body. There are always factors that change history. And it'd be a shame to have made a decision like this one and then not really achieve that absolute greatness. But, you know, he's still got time. There's no doubt. But I'd be surprised.
Just looking through.
We'll have another conversation about this.
Just looking at Dan Murphy's online in the Penfold section, Jared. I'm sure Todd's got a bit of it in his cellar, so we might have to make
Mate,
it interesting.
I thought you were a bit more of a Penfold Max's man. I can afford that.
Todd, great to have you on. There's plenty happening in the world of tennis, and we look forward to all of your work on Channel 9 this summer.
Good on you guys. Thank you.
Todd Woodbridge giving us his insights into not only his own career, but that of the Davis Cup. Mm. I think you're more of the Bordley man. We're both the Bordley men here.
Of course.
A good exchange at the net by you two. We'll see who wins when Novak puts the jab in his arm.
We're here for Macca's 30 days in 30 deals. More Sports Day right after this. Very interesting from Todd. Not one to back away from a point of view.
No,
that's
he's still
why,
got
that's,
the...
That's
still
why we love him.
Had the volley going.
Did have the volley going. What have we got before we... Oh, we've got Zoe joining us. What's this? Oh, she's got a theme song.
She's got her own theme song.
Look out.
There's been a lot of weather chat in this studio tonight, and none of which I've been involved in, which is a little bit offensive, but...
So you've brought your own theme song.
Yeah,
that's the type of creativity that we demand on this show.
Let's move on. Thursday, the 2nd of December.
Zoe.
I will tell you, Zoe, that the winds are going to be southerly. 10 to 15 knots, tending southwesterly in the morning. That's the west side of Cape Otway. So a few hours later, it'll happen here in Victoria. What other weather information have you got?
The weather, which is thanks to a New Farm weather update, Australian through and through. In the city here, 18 degrees.
Yep.
Heating up to 31 throughout the day. Quite humid, showers developing and a possible storm.
Tomorrow's going to be 31 with southwesterlies.
Yes.
Oh, gee.
It's going to be a weird day.
It's unusual.
Up at the border, 32, a shower or two developing, possible storms there as well. And at the island.
Phillip Island.
Yes, of course. 26 there, a little bit, little cooler.
A little cooler.
Still quite humid, shells developing and a possible storm there as well, but it will clear up for Friday.
And surf size?
Large.
Large. Mm.
Go on, take us through the weather report. Dr. Healy?
Well, I'll just give you the
surf report. Sorry.
On the other side of Cape Otway, southwesterly, 1.5 to 2 metres, so dribble at Phillip Island. 3 foot, maybe.
Is there any ever good surf at the island?
Yeah, it's good surf at Phillip Island. Yep.
Really?
Yep. On northeasterly, they've got Woolamai and sort of some virtual south-southeasterlies.
Have competitions.
You've got
there,
the other end of the island where Wright Point and those places are, but you need quite a big swell for anything with southeasterly offshore.
Just before we go, you know, thank you, Zoe. And feel free to continue contributing.
You got Express Point on Northerly, which doesn't break that often, but evidently when it does break, it's pretty good.
You know what I watched last night? And don't ask me why, because I got no idea.
No.
The original Point Break.
Oh, did you?
Yep. With
Patrick.
Keanu Reeves and Patrick Swayze and Gary Busey.
Mm.
And I just laughed at the last 20 minutes that's set it at
Bells.
At Bells.
Yep.
I wonder where they filmed that.
No, I think it was at sunset.
Where did they film it?
At sunset in Hawaii. Pretty sure that's where they filmed it.
Ah.
Transposed it to Bell's Beach.
The signs, I mean, I think the movie's like 91.
Yeah.
But like the signage for Bell's, they didn't go into a whole lot of detail
no.
for actually saying to Bell's. And by the way, a couple of the Australian accents.
Yeah, they were poor.
Attempted Australian accents from the police on the beach. Shocking.
And I didn't see one red cliff.
No.
Because that's what Bell's is renowned for. It's barren red cliffs.
If that movie got remade today, I mean, granted they have remade it recently, but it sort of recontextualised it. And you had Bells there. You'd have to film it at Bells. Or you'd have to do a better job at making it look like Australia.
I think so. There's so many more people now have seen
That's
Bells.
Right. We're also more interconnected with social media.
That's right.
Anyway, that was Zoe's weather report and my film report. And that does us for this Wednesday evening. I hope the rain has subsided. It looks like tomorrow's going to be just as awful, to be honest.
Does it?
But good news for Zoe and Lawrence is that they've
got
the day off.
They've taken a full day off.
Full day off
to get on the squirt.
For a Christmas party that starts at 4:30. Just consider that.
Oh, no, I'm coming in to do my first show.
Oh, this is unbelievable.
Oh, well, does this mean you get Friday off as well to recover?
I get Friday off to prepare the boss of show.
Oh, do you do? Did you? Hutchie's show?
I was poached.
Oh, you were too. Okay.
Have a listen.
Who's best, Hutchie or Pickers?
Careful how you answer that.
I rate them both equally.
Oh, nice.
We'll see who performs best tomorrow night.
Okay. See you tomorrow, everyone, unless you're Zoe or Lawrence.